Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to our shiny new podcast with great graphics and subliminal messages behind Ben's head.
Thanks, Thomas Frank.
So, first thing, listen to CoffeeZilla. This is a story that he did last week about the casino betting that a number of influencers were doing. We talked about the ethics, which he then brought up in his own video. It's really good on its own. Interesting piece for you. The ethics, the story, for those of you who haven't heard it, is that there's all of these influencers who are promoting unregulated crypto gambling that is offshore. And there's a number of issues with it, which he lays out very well. One that's the biggest for me is that they are accepting money to promote it and receiving money to gamble. Like, so they're actually not risking anything. Sure. So the ups and the downs are a joke because they're actually just making money the whole time. The second one is that little kids can do it because it's totally unregulated. Yeah. And the third, which I didn't know, is that casinos have a process by which you can self-exclude. So you can say, hey, I am a gambling addict. I have a problem. Please do not let me gamble at your casino. And they will actually like take your information and not let you. These casinos do not have that option. The thing that I didn't consider, and I mentioned this, and I think I was right, is that he talks to the guy who he kind of exposed as doing it. And he seems to feel bad about getting caught. And he says, you know, what do I have to do to make this right with you? Which is, there's just the moral understanding. And he says, I've never actually thought about this before. Like, no one in my circle ever said that this wasn't a good thing to do. Mm. And I genuinely believe that.
It didn't occur to him that he was doing something wrong.
Yeah, correct.
Until the CoffeeZilla video.
Yes. And even his sense of wrong is like, it was, what do I have to do to make this right with you, CoffeeZilla? And not, what do I have to do to undo the harm that I've caused my fans and my audience? It, which is like, send them the money that you made. You know what I mean? Like, which nobody suggested, but it's...
Take all the money you made from this thing and distribute it to the people who lost money because of they were following your recommendation.
Yeah, yeah, because you...
And that still won't make them whole, by the way, because they probably lost way more money than you got paid. But at least you were not profiting off their losses and they're a little bit mitigated from the harm that... Mm-hmm. Following you cause them.
There's a lot of things. And what I found most interesting, typical, and not exceptional was that there's people's understanding and sometimes my own of morality is just like, what'll get me accepted by the group? Mm-hmm. Like what'll make the punishment go away for this? And I genuinely believe people want to make the punishment go away and can be made to feel bad and guilty about things. But there is such a almost non-existent instinct of like, have I caused harm? How do I undo that harm? Which is not, you can solicit other people's advice on it, but it's not about clearing you in the mind of some third party judge arbiter who's going to uncancel you. It's about just trying to rectify what you've done. I just found it fascinating because I totally believed him, A, that nobody said anything, B, that he'd never thought about it before, and C, that he wasn't being guided by some sort of internal moral compass that was anything larger than what is happening around me, what is acceptable.
It wasn't an epiphany of like, oh, I should try to undo this harm.
Yes. Yeah, man. This is actually something that I want to talk about. If nothing comes up for you here, you did the sociopath video lately, which I'm sure there's some links between that. I actually didn't watch your video, so you could tell me what makes a sociopath.
Sure.
But I'm sure one of the things is like disregard for harming others. You know, like,
well, this is the thing. I actually believe this. Logan Paul said this when they were doing the video about Jake and if Jake is a sociopath. I think it's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. I think that the actual diagnosable sociopaths and psychopaths are very far down the spectrum. I don't think it's close, if that makes sense, between a normal person who has some tendencies like this versus a diagnosed antisocial personality disorder person. I think they're leagues ahead in a way that is meaningful. But I think everybody has areas where they lack empathy. And that's the defining symptom of being a sociopath, is that you can't empathize with other people's pain and sadness. And we all have some degree of that. We buy iPhones that children in mines get, or we buy clothes from Nike.
If you live in a city, you walk past homeless people. Yeah. You know,
like, and so I think if you can feel empathy, strong empathy for anybody, basically that eliminates you from being diagnosably ASPD. But we all have that lack of empathy for somebody. And it just depends who you are in terms of how that shakes out. But I think society tells you which people you can ignore. You know, I think it's very common if you're raised in a place that says you don't need to have empathy for this certain class of people. Very few people extend that group empathy.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it seems that one of that biggest groups is like people that you have a difficult time seeing or imagining. You know,
being far away from you.
Yeah,
people can walk past Skid Row every day and not mind, and those people are 10 yards away.
Yeah. So I didn't watch the video, and I think the spectrum thing is definitely true. I just also, I'm sure that you could take and people have done this. They like apply the ASPD traits to the American society at large. Well, and are like, you know, disregard feelings of other people.
Here's what I'm saying. This person, you're saying in this instance had a sociopathic moment with their audience where they didn't have empathy for the pain they were causing. But I'm saying if they then find out that a friend's dad died and get teared up at the thought of the pain that person's going through, they're automatically not actually a sociopath. I think people are very quick to be like, oh, how could you possibly do that to this one person? You must be a sociopath. But if you can have strong empathy for anyone, then you're not technically.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is even like we're starting from the presupposition that there are sociopaths and that is a useful definition. And I think in some context it is when you're trying to convince someone of the severity of their inability to fit in with society. I guess what I come back to is like all of these diagnoses and all of morality is just totally relative mm-hmm. to your surrounding, such that in 200 years, we're all going to be diagnosable sociopaths or whatever they call it. ASPDs, you know, it'll have evolved by then. And I guess in watching this, I was just very struck.
Sorry, I actually don't know that I believe that. Do you want to dive into that? That we will all be diagnosed as sociopaths? Yeah, I'll bet against that.
Okay, so that take the things that a lack of empathy. What are some of the other traits? So you did the video.
Well, there's symptoms and signs. So like the biggest symptom is that you can't empathize with other people. And the signs are that you don't feel bad about manipulating them. You're more likely to look at people and weigh what you can get from them mm-hmm. instead of having a relationship that's more based on, that's based on anything besides basically what they can get you in the moment. And you don't really have an internal guilt. You don't have an internal sense of, hurting this person has made me feel bad. So everything that you do on a logical basis. Because not every sociopath is a bad person, but they have a logical front brain understanding of right and wrong that guides them without any feeling of like, ooh, mm-hmm. I'm hurting that you're hurting.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I guess so you're saying, and that if you are diagnosable, there's no one on the planet for whom you would be able to conceivably feel those empathetic feelings?
For your closest people, you can get a shallow version of what most people get.
And so this is what I'm saying. It's if it is all a spectrum, there's no actual off switch and there's no fully on. Like fully on would be like all of capitalism puts first and foremost the transactional nature of relationships, right? Yeah,
but I'm just saying we don't consider slave owners sociopaths. So whatever mm-hmm. your thing today is that you think is sociopathic, ignoring the homeless. In 2300, they're not going to look back at us and say the way they treated the homeless, they were all sociopaths who lacked empathy.
Got it.
And so, I believe that because we don't look back at anything and think that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it sounds like what we basically do is we take the bottom 5-10% of empathy in society or concern for other people, and we categorize that as diagnosable.
Yeah, and maybe I'm not explaining this well, but it's a long tail. Mm-hmm. So the difference in the amount of empathy felt by those people is drastic compared to the other 95%.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. And I agree.
Like everything's a spectrum, quote unquote, but you can imagine a spectrum that's just a flat box basically, where it's like 10% of the population is 10% higher than the next 10%, yeah, yeah. which is 10% higher than the next 10. And this is like a very, very long tail such that you know, it's one in 30 people, but they're not feeling 10% less empathy than the people closest to them on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I understand. I think one of the things that I just react to in the comments is, there's a tendency to go, that's a sociopath and therefore I am not, you know what I mean? Which is not at all what you were suggesting. I sense that, I see it. There's this, we like to know the labels of bad things so that we can find other people that are those things, pretend that the world is a binary on off switch of which we do not have that bad thing. I've heard when people use the term psychopath or sociopath, that seems to be the connotation that sometimes comes behind it. Not necessarily that that's what you were doing at all in your breakdown.
I think most people who are sociopaths don't even know it. I think they just live their lives not thinking that they have anything abnormal in their brain, and they don't commit crimes. They become business people that break rules that don't result in them going to jail, but result in fines or whatever it might be. And sometimes become very high powered lawyers or business people. Like they're successful and cutthroat, but they're not necessarily thought of as non-neurotypical.
Yeah. And I think bringing it back to this casino gambling, I don't think anybody's going to accuse these people of being sociopaths, because that's like standard 2021 money driven. Mm-hmm. Don't think about the consequences. And I think you could make an argument that behavior belongs farther on the one side of the spectrum, because it is so, I don't think it would take a lot of consideration to imagine the harm that you're causing other people.
Well, I'll go the other route though. This is the Jordan Peterson argument. If you were in Nazi Germany, you'd probably be a Nazi. Sure. If everyone in their friend group is saying this isn't immoral, I actually think no. I think the normal human thing is to not have a strong internal compass of right and wrong. And so this guy doing this, to me, just indicate anything except for that he might, well, I don't want to badmouth the guy. A lot of people in Nazi Germany became Nazis. Let's just put it that way. And it took a very rare person to hide Jews in the attic and risk your own life because you thought what was happening was wrong. Mm. That was insanely rare. Most people either just put their heads down and tried not to do anything, or enlisted and fought for Nazi Germany. So I think that's normal human psychology is to allow yourself to do that. There are moral sociopaths. They have to fight that instinct, and they learn not to do that. So they go, I don't feel guilty stealing from Charlie, but I know that he wouldn't like it. Mm-hmm. And I know that I do like Charlie. And I also know that I wouldn't like if he stole from me. So I won't steal from Charlie. So there are sociopaths who go to therapy and they learn that their brain is not operating the way most people's do. And then they learn tricks to be moral and operate in society. Mm. It's actually some of the people we featured in the video. But it's a very like decision tree style look at morality.
Got it.
With the people close to you even.
Makes sense. So, another thing, did you see any of this story about Netflix stuff going on with the trans protests after Dave Chappelle?
Oh, you told me about this, Dave Chappelle, and
there was a walkout. And I also wonder with these things, there's these things that happen in popular news that are all the rage and everybody talks about. I'm like, there's one demonstration at one company and it's a week later, I'm going to mention it. So I apologize for for feeding what is potentially a non-story.
My question is, were they only walking out in the name of trans people?
They had demands about, they didn't demand that Dave Chappelle's special be taken down, I think because they knew that would be a bridge too far. What they instead demanded was that there was increased trans representation at things, that there was reduction of harm type committees and that sort of stuff.
So this is the only thing I didn't understand about the walkout. Dave Chappelle takes shots at everyone. Mm-hmm. So do we need more black representation, Christian representation, Jewish representation, gay representation, Like, I can't think of a group of people he didn't take a shot at.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is
including white people, which I think no one has ever advocated for more representation from. But if you're just going based on the Dave Chappelle special and who he insulted, it was everyone.
Yeah, to steel man it, when this it would be that the shots were not of equal force, and that some communities are more vulnerable, and that this is harm because people will now commit violence against trans people, whereas they won't against Jews or whatever.
But Jews are the most attacked group in the U.S. per capita.
Well, so that this is not going to happen as a result, and also that's not necessarily their fight. If you want to go protest, probably they would stand next to you if you were like, and we need more
was
Jews.
Was it only trans people protesting?
No. It was allies as well.
Yeah, so I'm curious why they decided to only ally it with this one group. After a comedy special that attacked everybody.
Well, I think because the one group is the one that's has stood. I think a couple things. I think that there's clearly, in terms of size, there's an activist push in that community and around that community that outstrips other communities. So that's, you know, they showed up is part of the reason. But yeah, my limited take as I was just doing it is like, they have a right to protest. Go ahead. You can walk out. Dave has the right to say whatever the hell he wants about anything, feel however he wants. By saying something can commit psychic harm or upset them to such a degree or create a more hostile society, you know, towards people that doesn't directly incite harm. I think it is not a nice thing to do. I think, and I don't think that's what Dave did, but let's just assume, take the worst case imaginable of this. I don't know. I think it's important that people can hate each other. I think you can protest their right to hate each other. And then I think Netflix ultimately has the decision of whether they want to broadcast it, not broadcast it, promote it, fire the people who walked out.
So now I'll switch sides because I actually will steel man this. They aren't saying Dave Chappelle shouldn't be able to say that. Mm-hmm. They're not saying he shouldn't be able to say it in front of an audience.
They're saying Netflix
shouldn't pick this up. So if somebody wants to get mm-hmm. on a megaphone and record themselves talking about and have all these old school 1800s views of race and who's superior to who and who has smaller brains, even though none of it's true, I don't think anyone's saying that guy shouldn't be able to shout into a megaphone, and I don't think anyone's even saying he shouldn't be able to record himself. They're saying Netflix would be wrong to then stream it mm-hmm. for everyone. Yeah, and I think that's a totally fair...
Me too. Well, that's what I'm saying. I actually agree with everyone's position and think this is playing out perfectly, which is you don't like it, complain about it. He has the right to say whatever he wants, and Netflix gets to make a decision because they own the business mm-hmm. and can do whatever they want. It's working. You know what I mean? Like, now, I do think that from a non-enforceable perspective, I would argue that that people do not adopt the perception of harm that language causes harm in the same way that fists or guns cause harm or language even directly that is inciting violence. I do object to the philosophical stance that this is akin to an attack, like a physical attack, which I think is part of the philosophical undergirding of this perspective.
Sure.
I disagree with it, but part of that is they're allowed to have that perspective sure. and they're allowed to scream about it. Now, one of the things, this was just, you know, a few isolated incidents. The few videos that I saw were like people would be holding signs that like, we like Dave, and somebody would grab the sign from him and rip it out. It's like, okay, that's now assault. You know what I mean? Like, and he doesn't have to go to the police and complain about it, but I guess I'm old school in my perspective of where the law and morality ought to step in terms of curbing behavior. And I would put physical violations towards the top of the, like, okay, don't do this. We need laws to prevent it. And I would put verbal altercations towards the bottom of that list. But I actually was going through this whole thing and I said, you know, everybody's upset. And I'm like, this is kind of how you want the system to work, which mm-hmm. is like workers can protest, businesses can listen or not listen. Comedians are telling jokes. It's like, this actually isn't horrible that this is how it's all gone.
Well, nobody really has a, not nobody. It is interesting to see that some people think that that walkout is totally fine, but then are flabbergasted at a vaccine mandate walkout.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally just think whatever your view is on if employees can walk out and protest, just pick it.
There's speech that could be broadcast on Netflix that I would be like, yo, you shouldn't do that. And it would not be merely offensive. And probably for me, it would be calls to violence or something like that. But yeah, people don't, I don't think, recognize that. And they pretend that they are principled thinkers when in reality they play for a team and then jack whatever principle they think backs their team in the heat of the moment in conversation.
Yeah, there's a lot of people misquoting HIPAA now because they don't want to get vaccinated. And so in order to a reporter will say, did you get vaccinated for the NBA? Because the NBA, certain cities are requiring vaccines. And they go, I'm not going to answer that. That's a HIPAA violation. No, you're allowed to. You're allowed to say it. It'd be a HIPAA violation if someone else were to get your records and leak them. If your doctor were to get interviewed. But anyone can ask you if you have a medical thing, and then you have the right to answer or not. You can just say, no, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But you just see a lot of people miss it because they think it makes
their case
for them. So it's like, HIPAA, I'm not going to answer that, HIPAA. That's not what this is.
You've never heard that word before this week.
Come out and say, like, tons of famous people have come out and shared if they're vaccinated or not. Mm-hmm. It's clearly not a violation of their own HIPAA protections.
I wonder if it is the case, I'm just thinking, because I think I'm sometimes of this case, that people don't know why they think the things that they think. Like, I imagine that some people certainly do, but why did you get the vaccine? Why didn't you get the vaccine? I bet you most people would actually struggle to give reasons consistent with previous behavior that...
Oh, yeah, yeah. They'd all give you a reason.
Be like, well, because I believe that if you can help other people, you have to do it. It's like, have you ever got the flu vaccine? No. Well, where was that principle then? Like, they would struggle to dive in and be like, oh, it's because of the severity of this one. And I've seen this. I've had that same argument with my parents who said essentially that, you know, you've got it where's a larger community. It's like, what was your charitable donation last year? And, you know, sorry to pick on them because these are the people that I debate with. They, in my opinion, my parents and other people have tried to make a virtue out of, you know, you have to help your community. And while I think that that's a nice principle, I don't think it explains the totality of their behavior. I think what explains the totality of my parents' behavior.
If you had that belief, because also it's like, if you had that belief, you would be doing something prior to
doing a lot of other stuff.
COVID or prior to the vaccine being out.
And to me, what explains their behavior really well is like, you keep CNN on all the time. You know, like that takes care of...
No, there could be others. You're scared of vaccine mandates. Yeah, your community will ostracize you if you don't get the vaccine.
I'm saying in the case of my parents.
Oh, okay. Like, I think there's a lot of reasons.
What explains their behavior? What is consistent with how they have behaved since COVID and before? Is CNN's always on in the background. And that takes care of everything. Oh, that's why you're not really concerned with donating to charity water because they're not on CNN. That's why you think the vaccine is really important. And they don't. And many people that I've had this similar conversation, you could switch CNN for Fox depending on what the belief is. They don't like having pointed out that they don't operate based on the principles that are instructed by their trusted news anchor that they're actually behaving on. Nor do they tend to then donate to charity or pick up the other area because...
Well, I do think in terms of self-reflection because I think a lot of people watching...
I love you, Mom and Dad, sorry.
Well, I think a lot of people watching...
I love arguing with you about this stuff.
They're like, oh yeah, totally. Other people are like that. I'm not like that or whatever it might be. I think the hardest thing to self-reflect on is finding the areas where you're a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. And I think... even if you don't change your behavior, it can be really powerful to figure out where you're a hypocrite. It's the strongest blind spot in a lot of people.
You know what's interesting is one of the most viral things about these flashpoint, you know, whether it's trans or the vaccine stuff, is that either someone on social media or your news is going to give you a virtue that you can pretend to have by being on the side that you are on based on mere exposure. Mm-hmm. And I think I see people love that. They like grab onto it. Like, I do this because I am for XYZ, when it's so obvious that if you were to take any sort of like look at their life and be like, is that consistent with the principle that you just claim to have? Mm-hmm. So obviously not. But people don't want to do that look because one, it would expose them to not have the virtue they have. And I think two, show that their behavior really is, and this is kind of the sociopath thing, it's just socially conditioned. It's like, what am I hearing most repeated? That is what my morality will be and become, and I'll tell everyone else is really virtuous.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the tactical question would be, how does one get out of that mindset? How does one start to form a intrinsic sense of morality or a set of principles that they judge morality by that isn't just influenced by
repetition?
What does today's society approve of? Like, how do you get to the point where you would free your slaves, or you would hide the Jews in the attic, or you would whatever today's thing is, and not be the 95% of people who are going to go along with the other 95% of people? Like, how do you build that set of morals, and how do you even start to strengthen your internal integrity like that?
Mm-hmm. You've identified a couple points. We talked about how it's dependent on what's going on around you, but there's this time frame thing, which is like, even if I can imagine this is one of, I suppose what you want to do is extend your time frame, even though it gets hard. But if you're like, oh no, anytime I make my child cry, I'm being a bad parent. So it's like, you just become totally permissive, right? Yeah. But what if you have a short time frame because you think you're going to die tomorrow, because you think, and you might, because you don't have enough food or whatever? Yeah, that's going to dramatically affect your sense of right and wrong in any given context. And so, like, fuck humanity in 1,000 years, like, send me food or medical supplies or something like that, or send that to other people. And if that's your background, that's probably where you tilt towards. And again, it comes down to scarcity, the fact that we don't have enough to do everything. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have enough to like do interstellar space travel and take care of every human and do all of this. Even in and I include in that, some people will push back and say, no, with capitalism, if you just took away from the rich people, but it's like, we don't have enough for everybody to be totally fulfilled with their money, and you know, not everybody can be rich, happy, etc. So hopefully technology makes that go away and psychedelics make that reduced, and everybody has enough always in the near future.
I think sometimes it can be confused in the media how much cash someone has versus how much wealth has. That's you know, Elon Musk, for instance, everyone's like, it's so ridiculous how much wealth Elon has. But he actually, when he was starting Tesla, was on the verge of bankruptcy with Tesla multiple times, putting in his own money to keep it going. And then Tesla was successful and he started SpaceX. And then again, SpaceX was one launch away from failing as he was putting his own money in. Mm. And I think one could look at him and say he's selfishly accumulating wealth, but someone else could look at him and go, he's actually putting a lot of his capital at risk to make these projects go. And the ones he's chosen, Tesla, he thinks global warming could be the end of all humanity. And SpaceX, he thinks that without space travel, it'd be the end of all humanity. And so basically you come to the point where, depending on how you view the world, you go, this guy's an evil psychopathic wealth hoarder, or you go, this guy is regularly putting all of his capital at risk for projects that picks specifically because they help people. And so I think that's where a lot of this friction or disagreement is coming from on a lot of these issues. It's just people who are looking at an elephant and, you know, the metaphor touching different parts of it. So if mm-hmm. people don't know that story, it's basically a bunch of blind people, or three blind monks, or whatever the story goes, are introduced to an elephant for the first time, and they each reach out and touch it. One touches its ear, one touches its trunk, one touches its tail, and then they debate what an elephant is, and they bicker, and they're all wrong because none of them can see the totality of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens a lot with this, with the societal schisms that we have on issues, is people aren't actually that different in their values, but what they differ in is how they see the issue. I think that's how you get so many people who are anti-abortion, pro-abortion, anti-guns, pro-guns, anti-vaccine, for vaccines, and each side of each argument thinks that what they're arguing for is saving the most human quality of life years, basically.
And it also, interestingly, I think that you could imagine if you were trying to have those three blind men come to an answer, a conclusion, or not get mad at one another, what would really hinder them is a character limit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Would it be like, fleshy! exclamation point at other guy. And the the technology that we've developed to suit the brains that we have is all about short labels that do this. And I think that's one of the
another
reasons.
Elon thing that might solve, honestly, this whole
he might
US
do Neuralink.
Civil war and this whole China, US, Russia global standoff might be solved by Neuralink. So again, yeah, it's is this guy hoarding money or is he saving the world?
Imagine that you could just download his entire life experience.
Maybe it's both.
Yeah, if you could download his life experience and it would all of a sudden make a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. Now, when compared to yours, you might come to a different conclusion, but yeah, it seems that one of the understanding takes time, obviously. And so when I think that's one of the Dave Chappelle things is that he called himself a TERF in the context of a joke, but I think he meant it sincerely in his understanding of it. And that word to some people is the most horrible, hateful thing ever. And to him, it's not. And it's like he says he is this thing, which to somebody else means devil. And he means something entirely different.
This is our big debate with Vosh, and this is why I wish we had thrown the word racist away. We were trying to decide what's racist, and the reason it mattered is because of everything that comes with that word.
Of the accepted connotation of what it means to be racist. Yeah.
At the end of the day, Vosh's definition was like everyone, black, white, or otherwise,
who votes Republican.
Who's in the U.S., because he said everyone is racist. It's like, this isn't what people mean when they say fire that racist.
Yeah.
You don't mean fire that human. They mean fire this person who has damaging, terrible, extreme beliefs of racism.
Well, this is the semantic problem, I think, in so many arguments, is we implicitly accept the connotations of the word racist, which is like to be frowned upon, potentially fireable, mm-hmm. you know, all of these things, and then have very different definitions of what it is and argue about it without like, what I tried to do in that conversation is just like, and this doesn't work, by the way, for discussions. It's just like, dude, you can have the word. It can mean whatever you want to do. I'm just going to then not attach the connotation to it.
No, that it doesn't
people
work. It's
do, a terrible, terrible
People
do
strategy.
Not like that. Because then it's
terrible
like, okay, strategy. Yeah, like you're a racist, I'm a racist, everybody's a racist. But that doesn't matter given your definition.
No, that's a very,
doesn't work at
very
all.
Ineffective persuasion technique that I would not recommend.
People don't follow you to the decoupling when they morph the meaning of a word from its common usage, which has with it a prescribed a prescription, a connotation, an outcome. And when you say, okay, I'll allow you to change the word, but you have to allow me to decouple the prescription. They don't go there with
no,
you.
And neither does an audience.
Yes. No, it doesn't work at all. So
I want to circle back to long-term focus. Sure. If that's cool. Cause you accidentally brought up something that I wanted to talk about today. Anyway, we were talking about the key to personal development a while ago, according to Naval Ravikant, is just the ability to zoom out and look long-term. And then very recently, actually you came to a business conclusion for running our businesses.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That was the same. And you didn't tie it to Naval at all, but you just were talking about, I've been studying Alex Hormozi and I've been studying all these successful people in business. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the difference between a billionaire and a millionaire is that a billionaire is constantly looking at a longer time frame. And I just think that's interesting. So the key to success in business, the key to personal development. So how do you cultivate a long-term focus? Because apparently it's the key to success in everything.
I think abundance, which is simultaneously outside of you and inside of you. So like, it's very hard to think long-term when you're starving, you know, you're not like, should I have this McDonald's right now? Is this gonna, you know, or, you know, should I smoke the cigarette, drink this drink, do this drug? It's a very different thing. So you need a degree of comfort and abundance outside of you. But I also think internally, and one of the things that has happened to me, which hasn't, I've been going back and forth is, interestingly, we moved into this house, my rent has gone up a lot, and my sense of financial abundance in being here has decreased, which is one of the reasons that I brought that up to you, because I was like, I now have this, I noticed this inner push psychically towards short term, like, I need money more, and I'm trying to notice that and resist that.
Yeah. Well, good news is it looks like you're completely resistant to it. Your behavior does not seem like it at all. So,
well, I'm not even like, I think that often where
you didn't make me come in sick today. So
I did not.
No, I'm just kidding.
Often where you're in my business focuses, and it's, you know, emblematic of where we are, is like 6 months a year down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not 10 years out.
No. And I think it's just such a useful question to just, for me as someone who isn't there, because you need both. You need to make it to 10 years and then you need something to do in 10 years.
Well, I think I know, for me at least, I know why. The 10-year horizon is so scary because you can work for 9 years and not get it. Like the Wrights brothers were the first people to fly, but they were going against someone else. Mm-hmm. The future for us would be the combination of VR and AI coming together to transform what it means to have interpersonal relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think about that and I go, man, what if we just invest all our money into it and then don't come up with a good VR, don't come up with a good AI. It's so much more certain when you're trying to achieve a 6 month goal. Mm-hmm. And it's so much more uncertain when you're trying to achieve a 10 year goal. Or that's how it feels to me.
Well, I would even say, and I'm trying to think of the way to frame it, implicit in your understanding of who we are is something, which is we have to remain charisma on command. We have to solve this particular problem. And if I think letting go of that with the 10 years, like, do I want to be doing charisma in 10 years? No.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't.
Well, you feel weird selling the business because your face is all over it.
Well, forget selling or whatever, but it's just like, I'm not concerned with charisma AI unless at some point I become interested in AI as it relates to charisma. Like 10 years, I'm not really sure, but I know, like, take the 5 year, I want to pick something that I'm excited about. Right now, that's D&D. Will it remain D&D? I don't know. But it does make you, one of the things that came from that question to myself, which may never happen because I think there's this, you have to wed the 6 months, the 1 year, the 2 year, and the 5 year, is maybe I'll be a DM someday. Like if I look at the 5 year time frame and I like Dungeons and Dragons and I want to make a Dungeons and Dragons show, the most chance that I can make an amazing thing if I am into it is by making the show, is by being the dungeon master. Sure.
Brendan Lee Mulligan.
Yes. And it's like, if I'm looking 6 months, it's like, oh, Brendan is so much better than me. I'm just like, there's no way, we're not even in the same ballpark. But I'm like, 5 years and I care? Maybe I'm really good. I don't know. So that's sort of the long-term frame is, is asking those sorts of things. And then the other questions that it leads is, okay, we do have this business 5 to 10 years. Do I want it to disappear? No. So that means that I should hire somebody. You know what I mean? And does it mean that I should hire the first person to alleviate my pain and like get me out of a system? No. It means I should hire the best person. You know, so it does have, it gets your brain thinking in different ways, at least for me, because I'm not a 5-10 year person at all. I'm like a 1-2 year. And then a lot of time I'm like, what do I want to do today? I'm very selfish and impulsive sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, the personal development side of being long-term is so easy. It comes so naturally to me in terms of charisma,
health.
It's like, oh yeah, today, whatever, caramel's yummy, but sugar causes cancer, so just give it up. To me, that's a no-brainer. It's very easy because I have so much certainty around the success of it. I'm like, if anybody works out enough, eats the right diet, they can get an insanely good healthy body. And in terms of charisma, I just felt similarly. I was just 100,000% convinced that with repetition and effort, I could learn this and master it and it would be guaranteed. And so that stuff is easy for me, where some people feel the opposite. Some people have such a struggle to stick with the personal development side.
Because they don't believe it. Yeah, yeah.
But they believe in the business side. So you see all these obese successful CEOs because they felt sticking with their business was the obvious, this is going to work thing. And they don't have any faith that if they do the sacrifice of giving up the foods, it'll even translate to being healthier.
Mm-hmm. Why? One thing that I've noticed is like who you surround yourself with, certainly. We have a friend who is just like, Mr. It's going to work out financially. You know, it's just, he just believes that. And I don't get to see him as much because we're not in the same country because of COVID, but like he's a good influence on me. Mm-hmm. I feel I've been in between him and you, you know, oftentimes. And I've been like, it's good for me to get pulled in that direction. Cause he's like, oh, dude, it's going to work. I'm like, oh yeah, it is. Yeah, it's going to be fine. You just do whatever you're interested in. You do it long enough. You stick to your interests and things work out. I think that what makes people the way they are is early childhood experiences. And for some reason, I had a pretty good upbringing with regards to I will be okay financially.
Mm-hmm.
And then your current group, like where they pull you and what else has made it. Your diet. I will say the one thing related to all of this is every single teacher you have comes with an implicit worldview. So I like listening to Alex Hormozi because he's long-term focused, but it's all about money. You know what I mean? It really is like, and
when you say diet, you mean mental diet.
Mental diet. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so like, I actually, as much as I enjoy him for business, I need less of him in my life because it's long-term focused on money,
mm-hmm.
which is like, even if you're focused long-term on that, it's how to make a lot of money, which is not what I really deeply care about long-term, but it can trigger that in me.
I think similar to how we're talking about how morality can be crowdsourced, I think priorities get crowdsourced too.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on where you live and your social structure and the community you grew up in, it's going to totally dictate how hungry you are for wealth and possessions and how much you actually think time in the sun is the mm-hmm. metric and walks in sunshine with your kids is the ultimate measure of success. And so the more you get to do that, the more you're winning. I don't think anyone wants to not quote unquote win at their metric, but I think different people have just totally different measures of what matters. And yeah. I think that gets crowdsourced to a large degree.
Totally. Totally. And what I guess I've, you know, see over and over again is that one of those characters in your crowdsource is your media diet for most mm-hmm. people. If you're on your phone or on your computer at all, and the blogs, videos, podcasts that you listen to come with implicit, non-spoken value systems. Like if you're listening to Tim Ferriss, self-optimization is important. it's just in there. Like succeeding at the game as the rules have been laid out in the most intelligent way possible is important.
People who have achieved what most people would consider enlightenment mm-hmm. are probably the quietest voices because they don't think it's super important how quickly you get there or if you get there at all because mm-hmm. you're on your path, if that makes sense. So if you think
everything's perfect, why?
If you think fitness matters and you were heavy set and now you're jacked
yeah.
and it's changed your life, that's your religion. You're going to be evangelical. If you grew up poor, you started a business, now you're successful, you're going to be evangelical about the importance of entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to go out and virtually go door to door knocking, saying, hey, you got to do this. You got to get in shape. You got to build wealth. It's the religion you should pursue. And if you're the guy that's achieved what most people would consider enlightenment, you're not going to go door to door. And what that means is the people who are probably not actually what most people would consider to be enlightened. The people who are trying to spread that message but are extremely concerned with subscriber count, view count, yeah, growth over time, month-to-month KPIs. It's like, well, I don't think you're like really fully living necessarily that feeling.
That's just not what enlightened people see or think.
I almost wonder if it's a good sign that like the Book of Joy was written by someone else.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
They flew in to interview the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
And asked him questions, and he was like, "Oh yeah, you can can be here, and yeah. I'll talk to you." And then they had to go turn it into a book while yeah. he just kept being the Dalai Lama or being Desmond Tutu.
It's generally a good sign that like to go see all these people, you have to go to their mountain. You know what I mean? It's
yeah. They're
does.
Not doing. They're not doing six figure. Tours. They're not
seminars.
Going corporation
yeah.
to corporation.
And it doesn't mean like, I know like Sadhguru is very active and he's got a huge business and that doesn't mean that there's no value there. But if the belief is things are okay the way that they are, everything is happening perfectly, it tends to correspond to not a ton of activity.
Yeah, I haven't been, but one of the reasons I would go to
But not that it's no activity, because things are perfect even in your activity. It's like even the franticness is perfect from the Elaine perspective.
Yeah.
So I hear. I don't know.
You want to go, speaking of the cheat code to temporary enlightenment, psychedelics?
Sure.
Johns Hopkins Medicine was awarded a grant from the National Institute of Health. Did you see this?
No.
So basically, this is the first government, my impression is this is the first government-funded grant awarded in over 50 years to fund psychedelic therapy, and it's specifically with tobacco addiction. But everything else has been donations. It's been a lot of people, especially tech startup people, have done it in their own life. They microdose when they run their businesses. They macrodose to work through a trauma. They go, holy shit, this is amazing. And by the way, I happen to have $10 million to $1 billion. So they donate. But it's psychedelics have picked up enough momentum that now the government is also funding projects for it, which is pretty huge because it's just another good sign that the stuff's all getting legalized.
Yeah, yeah.
Psychedelic therapy seems like it's a train that's picking up steam and cannot be stopped and will inevitably be something you can access without breaking the law.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope. So it's just another big milestone. The government's now involved as well. You don't need Tim Ferriss to be writing 7- and 8-figure checks.
That's the 5-year plan. And so that was, you know, we talked about the 5-year. I don't know if you have more you want to say, but.
No, it's just, it's great. It's a very, very good sign that it no longer requires interested multimillionaires and billionaires.
Yeah. When I zoomed out and I tried to do my 5-year and I tried to chill and I went, you know, forget the money. Like, forget money. What would it, be fulfilling and connect you and maybe help? It was like that sort of stuff.
Sure.
And then part of the challenge for me is like, okay, then what is the proper level of activity within Charisma on Command today? It's not zero, but it's like, that's, I do feel that, the world is setting us up for, it's a business layup. It's a personal fulfillment layup. It's like, this stuff is happening.
Well, it's not a layup. It's going to be the most crowded field there is.
Yeah. But that, again, there'll be space for me to tell the people that I care about to create.
Sorry, I just don't want to give people the false impression that they can.
Oh, I'm not
going to
be a billionaire. I'm not going to be a billionaire.
Oh, I just know a lot of people who follow this want to be entrepreneurs and don't know what to do. And I don't want to give the false impression that it's a layup to just wait for psychedelics and then get into space.
Sorry. I mean, personally, for my own.
Thousands of businesses will crop up day one.
And many will fail.
When that stuff becomes legalized. So I just don't want to give the impression
that
it's easy.
We'll succeed. And by succeed, I mean, we'll make enough money to survive and help people. And it's going to be, that's for sure. But yeah, I'm glad to hear it. Sometimes it feels far away and then that stuff happens. Like, dude, this is right around the corner. Like
next 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
I'd make that bet.
This isn't related, but I don't know why I thought of it. I was going to tell you and the audience, cause you kind of know, just in terms of what's legal. So I know someone, won't say more than that, who has been in Las Vegas for like basically 2 months, just wasting away, drinking, gambling. And the things that are legal, like our government has decided you need to be protected from magic mushrooms because we got it. You can't do it. But it's like, you know what you can be exposed to? Las Vegas, which is designed to just jack into your limbic brain. And some people, you know, can handle it responsibly. I'm not trying to get it shut down, but.
Well, for me, the strongest arguments for legalizing marijuana, let's say, or psilocybin, isn't that these have no risks at all and no one could possibly ever get hurt. It's that these are less dangerous than what we've already as a society said is okay.
Yeah.
So it's like, listen, you can, I guess, keep weed illegal, but it seems weird to sell liquor and cigarettes on every street corner, but tell me I can't, I don't even smoke marijuana, but tell me I can't smoke marijuana because it's dangerous for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll have this conversation over beers while smoking cigarettes. This makes no sense.
Yeah.
And so that's where I go. If this is the society we're going to have that sells cigarettes and alcohol, then we should definitely have marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're going to do SSRIs and if we're going to do addictive painkillers, then psilocybin therapy seems like a much more beneficial, less risky comp to that. So yeah, that's kind of where I fall. It's like, yeah, could someone maybe take so many mushrooms that it hurts them or do something bad? I guess, but we as a society definitely don't only allow substances that have zero downside.
Yeah,
and so given the massive upside and the, in my opinion, smaller downside compared to what's already allowed, that's when it becomes a no-brainer.
This takes us back to the question of principles. Like, if you're someone who's for the prohibition of these sorts of things because they're illegal, it's like, okay, well, then you would seem understand. Like, I could find that more compelling if you're also for the banning of alcohol and probably a whole host of other deadly things. In fact, we could just look at the list of things that kills people, and we could find where, we could extrapolate where mushrooms or marijuana would be in the harm, and say anything above this, we're just going to get rid of, and it's going to be illegal.
In my head, I imagine someone drinking a whiskey Coke, smoking a cigarette, who is a senator who was saying keep marijuana illegal while they're drinking a soda, alcohol, and cigarettes. And that's where I go, this is hypocrisy. This is money at work.
Well, one of,
it's not principled.
Well, the catching fire argument, which I haven't thought deeply about, is that it's on purpose. It actually is following a principle that just not isn't stated, which is we like the drugs that keep people focusing, working Monday to Friday.
I agree with this.
Caffeine on Mondays, alcohol to de-stress and shut down.
Well, let's
on the
dive
weekend.
In. We haven't dove into this. We'll do it quick because I actually don't. I'm not 100% sure on this, but it certainly makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. So, do you want to dive into?
That's it. Is that the drugs that we have socially and legally permitted are those that keep you working in capitalism of the 1900s, which is you need your amphetamines and your caffeines to get going on Monday and in the mornings, and then you need your alcohol and your cigarettes to de-stress but keep you working. And it has nothing to do with flourishing or happiness, right, or spousal abuse, and everything to do with, you know, are you being a productive member of an industrial and then post-industrial society?
Yeah, and you see it in the 70s when you give people psychedelics. One thing it does is, we're talking about sociopaths, it expands your empathy. Mm-hmm. It expands your love for other people. It makes you not want to fly to Vietnam and kill people yeah, you don't know for a cause that you don't think is, you don't feel like you're fighting for a moral injustice. Yeah,
you know, it's interesting.
And so a bunch of people take psychedelics and go, I don't want to go to Vietnam and fight your war.
Yeah.
And the government doesn't like that. And then you take a bunch of psychedelics and you go, you know, I really think that time with loved ones is what mm-hmm. matters the most. And working more than I have to get food and shelter seems silly when I could instead be bonding with my children or my parents. And mm-hmm. the people in power go, this, well, that's not, we need GDP. We need gross.
It's not just the people in power. It is the system of which we collectively are part of. Yeah.
But I think that the presidents and senators involved in making the decision were thinking, oh, that's bad for the country, because their view of the country is economic power, military power, mm-hmm. not necessarily individual enlightenment and fulfillment.
Yeah. I mean, hippies are, if you're around there back then, they're all these freeloading, sleeping in vans. You know what I mean? It's like, this isn't, I understand the reaction from like working class people, and you're like, this is the next generation. You're like, dude, we got to stop whatever they got in their system. And
well, weirdly enough, if your country hadn't started by picking a bunch of fights and doing a bunch of wars, I mean, we're in a weird spot. Once we drop, I think a lot of people are going to come try to beat us up and take our stuff. But having a country that nobody wanted to attack, where everybody was sleeping in vans, eating food that they had farmed and being happy, doesn't sound so bad to me.
Yeah. But who knows how long that lasts, of course. I mean, I think I don't want to not give defensiveness and economics its due in a dog eat dog world, which is like you need a critical mass of people in the country and the world.
Well, that's why
I think
it works for Costa Rica and Scandinavian countries, is because they are small enough to be left alone, and they basically just ally with a big power. No, I think this is why I think it won't work for the U.S. because if the U.S. did this, we would just have military consequences. I think
it's too shiny what we got going on over here. Maybe,
and we've been too involved. I think you can't just like beat everybody up with a stick and then be like, I don't want to do this anymore.
We're done. We've learned.
Isn't that the ultimate? Oh man, what was the? Oh, there's some movie or TV show where that's basically the punchline, is that you can't try to opt out after having lived a violent life, because your violent life comes knocking on your door.
Oh, I feel like that's so many.
Yeah.
I don't know which one you're talking about, but I know the trope.
Yeah. That's kind of where the U.S. is. It's mm-hmm. like, even if we realize the error of our ways. Oh, it's the Ten Rings.
Oh, don't tell me, man. I didn't see it.
Oh, my bad. Spoilers.
I was waiting for Disney Plus in 2 weeks.
So, yeah, not the Shang-Chi Ten Rings. I was talking about the Lord of the Ten Rings.
Lord of the Ten Rings.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, next thing.
What else you got? That's it for me.
Let's do questions.
Cool.
First one is, I really respect the fact that you're willing to just let anyone on the internet submit questions to your channel through a forum. And I understand that YouTube can be very frustrating at times, especially as an institution and platform that makes a ton of mistakes very publicly. However, in episode 118, which was the one before Thomas Frank, You were talking about YouTube's attempt to be more inclusive through this collection of certain demographic data and said that you would bet money that YouTube would only make adjustments in a single direction, i.e. against white straight males on the platform. Google Alphabet, YouTube's parent company, has actually in the past, 2019, I believe, adjusted in favor of the white straight male demographic when it found that the white straight male software engineer cohort was in fact paid less on average than other software engineer cohorts. They do this study internally every year, and they compensate those employees out of pocket to account for the inequality regardless of which demographic. They listen to the actual numbers and leave politics out of it. I understand why there might be a perception otherwise, but I have no experience myself that would lead to believe that they don't follow the data, even when it looks bad publicly. I'm going to qualify this with when they decide that they are going to do something about a particular issue. I'm an Alphabet employee myself, but I'm not making any statements on behalf of the company. These are my own opinions, and I would love to hear what you have to say on the matter as well. And the question I have is, do you have your own experiences or facts to the contrary, specifically when it comes to YouTube?
So I got two thoughts on this. One is, if it's true that they're agnostic to the which group is which, I think that's great. If your principle's going to be we need to have equal outcomes and equity, then being blind to that only being certain groups, that's great if Google does that. Then the other question I would have is, are white software engineers paid less because they work less hours?
Yeah, I would presume
positions. Yeah. So I guess it's if that is caused by racism hurting white engineers of similar positions, of similar output, of similar effort, whatever it is, then great. You know, the fact that they're helping. But I have the same reaction to this that I do for most of these things. Just like, is that because of the positions they hold, the hours that they work? Is there a meritocracy reason for that discrepancy or not? Maybe there is, but maybe there isn't.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Well, that's not their question, but I understand. But
my response to this is like, that's better than if you only are going to adjust.
Well, you shouldn't look at cohorts at all. Yeah. You shouldn't.
Yeah, well, you have to look at the cohorts in the realm of output for the business,
yes,
basically. So there's tiers. It's like only helping certain people because of their demographic information. That's worse in my mind than helping people agnostic to their demographic information and looking instead based on need if you're the government or performance if you're a business. And then my question for this is like, was it good that Google paid those white people? Were those white people paid less for reasons that actually make total sense mm-hmm. from an economic perspective?
Yeah. Well, also I'd actually like to look at this because I will admit I am skeptical of that. And this is true of, we're going to be, all of us, receptive to like studies show that confirms my bias. This one disconfirms my bias. So I want to dig more into it, which I think is the natural instinct. It's tough for me to comment on just from what you said about it. I don't disbelieve you, but I wonder what the surrounding context might be, what happened in the company at large, if this was a poster boy thing. And the reason is it's not necessarily specific to, I'm trying to think, is it specific to Google/YouTube? It's a little bit. It's part of my impression of Google YouTube is that I have a category in my brain that I would label as like woke behavior, which is even doing the analysis demographically
Alphabet is such a giant entity.
Oh, it's huge.
The compensation analysis inside of one business arm of Alphabet mm-hmm. and the people that run the YouTube algorithm could have completely different ideologies.
Yes. So, and so I'm in treating Alphabet as a unity. That's, I'm crazy, but I put them in that camp of woke decision-making because I see that they use the term Latinx in a lot of their communications, which that they send to me and I receive. They're doing the demographic analysis on the first place, which seems to, is not how I would try to fairly compensate workers. I would try to make sure that people who did work were paid appropriately for the work that they did.
Here's my thought. If you only look at two data points, us and KSI, and you determine that we're not doing as well because of our skin color, it's like, no, KSI makes better content that more people want to watch. So you shouldn't then have the YouTube algorithm pumping us on the homepage to try to even it up.
Well, I think this point was made. This person has a different question though. Like we're totally in alignment here. This particular question was, what is your experience with Google/YouTube/Alphabet?
Why do you think that they would
predispose?
I thought they were saying given that they did help white workers in that instance, are you in favor generally of this sort of demographic work? To which I say, I still think.
Yeah. To that question, I agree with you. They're asking, I think it was to me because I said it.
Got it.
Why do you think that? And so I'm trying to articulate why I think the way that I think. Yes, because I broadly put YouTube and Google into a similar bucket, which is the tech bucket, which also has shades of wokeness in there. The communications that I've received from them use the term Latinx. They talk about marginalized creators that they divide up by the presupposition. And these are previous communications that I've received for them, like the newsletter things that they predetermined were women, LGBTQ, Latinx. Latinx is a dead giveaway for me of someone that I, in my opinion, is I'd like to talk to someone who could make a compelling case for Latinx.
Yeah, we talked about it before, but your brief version is that's someone who's like making the decision for Latin people that Latino and Latina is sexist, but it's, Latino and Latina is inherent to their language and mm-hmm. not.
Well, I think it indicates someone who doesn't speak Spanish at all.
Because you wouldn't say that a table is feminine and needs to be treated differently because mm-hmm. it's a mesa.
Well, they might. This is the thing. Like they might. So anyway, I've not heard a good argument for Latin. I call it Latinx to make fun of it because I think it's stupid. You would call it Latinx if you were at all interested in getting the Spanish right. It's just ridiculous. So anyway, that all is the thing. And I put that woke stuff together into a larger woke category, which isn't fair, but this is, I think, how all of our brains work and how mine, with this particular issue worked with, which is, the categories that we are most in, like in speaking to Vosh, the categories that we're most interested in equalizing for or raising up tend to be non-white, non-male, et cetera. I haven't heard a lot of argumentation, from society at large that we need more female deaths in war, for instance, or that we need women to die sooner and men to die later, or that, you know, that we need homosexual men to be paid 10% less so that they're on par with heterosexual men. And to be clear, I don't think any of that is true. When Joe Biden, and I'm talking about the larger woke thing, released the White House thing of like, you know, here's how much, you know, white men make $1, white women make 91 cents, da-da-da. They neglected to put on the top of that little chart they had was $1, but they neglected Asian men who make $1.05. They just left it off the chart. And so
I also think Indian Americans would be above the chart as well.
Yeah. It's not specific necessarily to Google. There's a larger category of woke that I am making assumptions about them and connecting them to. Which is why I have that impression.
But he'll eat his words if YouTube makes a public statement saying that they're going to start giving extra pushes to all the white cis men.
I'll be super disappointed if they do, honestly.
But you'll also have to eat crow in your prediction.
I'll be skeptical that it's not a token thing for a much larger agenda of everything else. So I hope that...
it's just make an algorithm that promotes content that people want to watch.
Yes, I agree. That seems to be the case. And don't ask for demographically defining information and don't scan for it, you know, any more that we would want to scan for, like, oh, wow, if we found out that blue-eyed people are making 10% more than brown-eyed people and we gave brown-eyed people a 10% raise, I think that would be bad. We've talked about this stuff at length, and so I know that I'm not closing the loop on every single... expected rebuttal to that because I know what comes after that, but rather than argue with a phantom in my head, I'll just answer your question there and say that's why I think the things that I think.
Cool. Let's do one more. So about 3 years ago, I became really interested in a girl I was friends with. So I asked her out and we went on one date. She ended up rejecting me, which hurt at the time, but I got over it. We've remained friends ever since, but I'm unfortunately finding myself having feelings for her again. I don't know if I'm deluding myself or not, but sometimes I feel like she feels the same way about me and that neither of us will say anything out of fear of losing the friendship. It's probably a cliche question, but is there a good way to find out how she feels without risking compromising the friendship?
I feel like once every 3 years, you're allowed to take the temperature again.
Yeah.
I don't think that would hurt so much.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I also, I mean, not being there, I can't tell you if I were watching. My inclination is that I don't want to salt this, that probably it hasn't changed because that's rare that people go from not interested to interested. In fact, what is, like, for better or worse, far more common is in the first 20 seconds they make a decision that remains for a long time. Or if you, like, our friends disappear, come back.
I can think of someone. That, I mean, it was only 1 year, but there was someone I was interested in freshman year. And then I left for 3 months, put on 40 pounds, totally different haircut, came back. And she was interested in being more than friends. But
different haircut, baby.
So it is possible, I guess. Yeah, I don't want to rule out that you but were. He could have been 14 and now he's 17.
Sure, sure. You might have. If you transformed over that period, more likely. But yeah, two things is, I think you're totally fine to.
I'm probably biased by my own experience of being a late bloomer, but.
You're not being, I think, overly persistent by checking in.
Every 3 years.
It's okay for you to check in.
Yeah.
And be like, hey.
Just don't have any expectations.
And, know that we discussed this in the past, but it's getting some different vibes lately. What's your sense of this? And she goes, no. I'd be like, I have bad radar.
Yeah, exactly. Just take it on the chin and laugh and don't let it hurt the friendship.
I have terrible radar. Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Is that it?
Yep, let's hit the Patreon.
We're going to hop over to patrons. If you guys want to check out the Patreon, we are discussing Justin.
We're going to talk about being more vulnerable in conversations, getting out of your own head, and then attraction standards in dating.
Amongst 20 other things, because there's a lot of questions. So if you guys want to check that out, any amount will get you access to the second thing. Hope that you guys join. It helps us keep the podcast going. Keeps money in Justin's pocket, food in his belly, heat in his house, all those sorts of things. So hope to see you guys there. Cheers.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.